Hello, my name is Dr. Janet Woods, and I am the founder of the Art of Life Consulting and the podcast, A Notable Life on iTunes. I'm here today broadcasting from the StoryCorp in Irvine, California, and I'm here with my dear friend, Joe Alvarez.
Hi, Janet. It's great to be with you this morning / this afternoon, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I am too. Even though we've known each other for, well, not a long time, but for a short time, I just feel there's so much about you that I think more people should know about.
Well, thank you. I look forward to sharing my my experiences in life.
So tell me, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Pomona, California. It's a city on the eastern edge of Los Angeles County. I was born at Pomona Valley Community Hospital on June 11th, 1963, and was basically raised in Pomona all of my life. Lived in basically two houses.
Mm-hmm.
My parents had a home in South Pomona.
Uh-huh.
I lived there until I was approximately 8 to 9 years old.
Okay.
Attended Washington Elementary School.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved to the northern part of the city on Barbara Lane. And that's where, in the fourth grade, I attended Kingsley Elementary and then Emerson Junior High, and ultimately graduated from Pomona High School.
Oh, nice, nice. So you are definitely a community person.
Definitely a community person, born and raised here in Southern California. Maybe a unique fact, even though that I was born and raised in Southern California, from personal likes and so forth, I'd say one thing that's unique is I am not a hot weather person.
Really?
I like the sun, obviously, the seasons for the sun, but really enjoy fall and winter where it's a little bit more crisp and cold as opposed to sunny all the time.
I would have never known that about you. So tell me a little bit more about your family heritage.
Well, Alvarez is actually originated, I think we're ancestry would be traced back to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were, my father was born in Mexico. My mother was born here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And then my father came to the States when he was a young child.
Mm-hmm.
And then met my mother. But the ancestry is, I would say it originated in Spain, but both we obviously are Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
By definition.
Oh, okay.
So I had the opportunity to go back and visit my where my father was born.
Mm-hmm.
And where my mom, both parents spent some time in Mexico in their childhood years.
Oh.
But ultimately, the bulk of their childhood years was here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Where their citizenship was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a unique experience to go back and visit the areas where they spent some of their childhood years.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, I know we already talked a little bit more about community and
mm-hmm.
that you grew up in Pomona.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you an interesting question. What do you do for a living?
Well, the general definition is IT, with a focus on cybersecurity.
Oh, wait a minute. Did you say you drink tea?
No, IT. IT. The general definition is IT,
mm-hmm.
With a focus in cybersecurity and with a spotlight on not so much the technical side of cybersecurity, but on the human side of cybersecurity, which includes people, processes, and paper. Basically, what I do is go into companies and from a human perspective, an employee perspective, see how they handle the data that they're entrusted with. Now, there's the software and hardware component
mm-hmm.
that attempts to keep malicious viruses and malware and so forth.
Intrusions. All of our favorite things.
Exactly. And intrusions out. But ultimately, the last line of defense is people, mm-hmm. employees. So with that, I concentrate on making sure that the employees are knowledgeable and educated. That is done in a variety of ways, from both using software services, but mostly people-to-people interaction / training.
Uh-huh.
Making sure that everyone's on board. And by when I say everyone, I define that as everyone from the president, the owner, the C-level, right on down to anyone else who may handle the company's data. And data is not just defined as client birthdays or credit card information. Mm-hmm. Data encompasses all, which includes email address, phone numbers, any type of information that would go into a device for retrieval and manipulation and access in the future, / laptop, mm-hmm. And PCs and tablets and cell phones. That's where I concentrate on, is how they handle that data. Because every piece of information within a company, regardless of how insignificant they may view that data, is important to somebody to sell on the dark web. It can be used for unscrupulous purposes, and that's why, regardless of what type of data a company may view as valuable or invaluable, all data is valuable to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of goes along with that saying to some degree, one man's trash is another person's treasure.
Okay.
Well, all data is considered treasure to someone in the underbelly of the internet.
Wow. Well, you know, I always thought that cybersecurity was all about like your login and...
It's all-encompassing. Mm-hmm. Login, passwords, how it's handled, mm-hmm. how it's accessed. I take a look at everything from how data is processed. For example, one of the challenges that I view in cybersecurity training on a human level is sometimes the president, the owner, the C-level views it like, well, I just need my people trained, but I don't want to take the time to relearn passwords every 6 months, every 3 months. I don't need this. I'm extra careful. While those are the main targets of,
really?
Of unscrupulous actors is owners of companies, CFO, C-level individuals, because they're the ones that generally feel that they don't need the training or they don't need the knowledge or they don't want to take the time to reinvent a new password, per se.
Yes.
And you know, cybersecurity is only as strong as its weakest link. And so the fallacy in most companies is, well, we have our IT department, we have our firewall and our software, and we have our antivirus, and we're, you know, we make sure people change their passwords all the time. You know, that's only... that will only take you so far.
Oh, really?
You know, the employees need to be fully trained and understand that cyber awareness is part of the company culture. And that's what I concentrate on.
Well, I'm pretty impressed by that. So, Joe, let me ask you, what do you like about your industry or any final comments about the cybersecurity field?
You know, I think the one thing that I truly enjoy about cybersecurity, IT in general, is that it's helping people. It's helping people do things better, faster, more efficient. Along with that comes a sense of responsibility to make sure that as they accomplish whatever they seek to accomplish with technology, faster, simpler, more efficient, is to make sure that they do it in a responsible way, that they're not setting themselves up to be bogged down because they didn't understand the technology or the risk that were associated. Technology today, there's a number of rewards that come with using technology. But as with reward, always comes risk. And the risk can be time-consuming if they're not, if the risks aren't understood and identified, and somebody becomes a victim to a cyber breach or data theft, can be very time-consuming. So one of the things that I find rewarding is lowering that risk. The other item that I, as far as final thoughts and what I find rewarding, I always advocate to businesses that if their data is breached, stolen, locked, frozen, internally or externally by employees or by an unknown actor somewhere in a foreign country or domestically, is what would they do? Most people think that cybersecurity is an expensive undertaking. And my response to that perspective and that thought process is cybersecurity can be as expensive as you'd like it to be. You can spend hundreds of thousands, if you're a Fortune 500 company, thousands of dollars on making sure that your network and its data and your livelihood, most important, that data is cash. It's okay. Revenue.
Okay.
It can be as expensive as you'd like it to be protecting it.
Okay.
You ought to purchase all the hardware and software services and everything that falls under those two categories. But there are some no-cost measures that companies and individuals can undertake. And then there's low-cost measures that companies and individuals can undertake, and moderate, and then high cost. But I'm not associating a dollar value with any one of those columns that individuals can undertake, no cost, low cost, moderate cost, and high cost, because it's all relative. One thing that I encourage individuals and companies to do is, if your data is ever stolen, breached, internally or externally, how much are you willing to pay for that data to get it back, to access that data? So take that and divide it by two and make that your cybersecurity budget on top of what you're already doing. And instead of putting it towards more hardware and software services, look at how your people and processes are in place today to make sure that as employees are the last line of defense, how are they guarding your data? And again, take whatever you think it may be, $1,000 to get your data back by some by buying Bitcoin to pay someone, whether it's $1,500, whether it's $500, and take that and divide it by two and make that your cybersecurity budget and grow from there and start with zero. Bring someone in who is outside of the organization to take a look at your cyber culture and provide no-cost measures, no-cost avenues to pursue to elevate your cybersecurity posture, position, and lower the chances of you being breached.
Wow, that is some great advice. Because I can tell you, just as an entrepreneur, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've had to call my computer guy and say, I can't get in my computer. And it's really not about the software or the hardware. It's more about me not doing my due diligence.
Exactly. You know, one thing that I also encourage to clients, if you ever want to know the impact of what a data breach, of how a data breach would affect your company, for a period of X hours, whether it's 2, 4, 6, 8, shut down all of your technology, just like you would have to in a data breach, and see what impact it would have on your company. It's better to be prepared than unprepared. It's better to know than to not know. So one of the things that I also advocate to clients is, let's run a simulated data breach in a controlled environment where we can bring the network back up.
Okay.
On our own,
uh-huh.
As opposed to being dependent on having to pay somebody who's stolen our data or frozen our data on our network. Let's see how the company would react. That's what we can control. Companies can control how they react and how prepared they are. Where most companies potentially miss the mark is that they rely on their IT department, who's doing a great job of backing up their data, but nobody ever really runs a simulated data test to see how long it would take them to get back up and running. Keep in mind, that data, any company's data, should be viewed as its revenue stream. Because without that data, most companies come to a grinding halt.
Whoa. So, Joe, I understand that, well, let me ask you a really interesting question. What does civic engagement really mean to you? Because I do understand that you are a member of the Irvine Chamber.
Sure. Well, civic engagement to me means giving back to the community in some form or fashion. With that, I am a member of the Greater Irvine Chamber here in Irvine, California. I'm also, part of my civic engagement is being a Rotarian, being a part of the Irvine Rotary. So let's go back to the chamber for just a few minutes. That's allowed me also to give back to the community, because while the understanding is that the Irvine Chamber is all about business, it's also about giving back to the community. This Irvine Chamber welcomes nonprofits, as I'm sure most, if not all, other chambers allow as members. But it really opens up more opportunities, in addition to what Rotary provides, for giving back to the community. For example, I've met a great nonprofit at the chamber, Olive Crest, which assists youth, foster care youth, who are in transition coming out of the foster care system. And so giving back to me means volunteering for some of their events.
Okay.
And it just may be as simple as setting up tables, picking up trash, cleaning up after an event, or actually engaging with the youth, as I've had the opportunity to do. And it's actually quite rewarding. Civic engagement to me means participating in some of the events that the Greater Irvine Chamber provides or produces. One of the great events that both the Irvine Chamber and Rotary participate in is the Irvine Global Village Festival. That's really a event that I look forward to participating. One, it's the one event where both organizations participate in, but it's also an event that showcases what I believe what our country is all about, which is bringing many people from different parts of the world and becoming one. So it is a cultural event that celebrates the diversity of Irvine, which I believe is a smaller version of our country. And it's really great to see that to some degree, with all the talk about division in the country today, that a city like Irvine, Rotary, and the Greater Irvine Chamber are all participating in an event where they lead by example, and participating in an event where all cultures from all parts of the world come together to celebrate their uniqueness, but also celebrate the coming together, the unity of the city of Irvine.
Well, I have attended the Global Village and also participated, and I can tell you that it definitely is, I would say, a melting pot of all different ethnic and nationalities. But it's, like you said, a microcosm of our world.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, we did talk a little bit about the Irvine Chamber, but I think you're being a little modest, because you do have some roles that you play at the chamber.
I do. One of the roles is the chamber. Yes, it is about promoting one's business and being active in the community and community involvement and volunteering. I do conduct training for the LEADS groups that the chamber sponsors. They currently have six networking groups, referral groups for businesses here in the greater Irvine area. And so I do the training for those. And basically the training encompasses making sure that new members who want to join a leads group understand the culture of a leads group and networking and really fast-tracking them into assimilating into the greater Irvine Chamber family of businesses and members. I'm also an ambassador for the Chamber. Ambassador's roles and responsibilities include attending ribbon cutting, grand openings, one-on-one welcomes with new members, and really walking new members through all of the marketing opportunities and networking events that the Chamber makes available to its members.
Thank you for sharing that, because I know that you actually play a major role for so many people as they come in as new members, guiding them along and helping them actually utilize all of the tools. And I do understand that the Greater Irvine Chamber has probably about 800 members?
Approximately 850 members. It's a organization with a staff of approximately, I believe, 19. The CEO is Brian Starr, and along with the leadership team there at the Greater Irvine Chamber, Linda DiMario, and Jessica Welch, Vice President and Director of Operations, respectively, they've built an outstanding professional organization that really benefits, and the ultimate winner is the businesses and members here in the Greater Irvine area.
So, Joe, I know that we talked about community. And in your conversation about the Chamber and your civic engagement, you talked about the fact that you love giving back and that you are a Rotarian. So tell me a little bit about why you are a Rotarian.
I think the main reason that I'm a Rotarian is, one, it has absolutely nothing to do with my professional life. It's all about giving back to the community. And I think that everyone reaches a certain point in their life that they want to start giving back to their community. Whether you're in your teen years, whether in your 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever age group one may find themselves with that thought, like, you know, I want to start giving back. I think, and I include myself in this group, there's a great number of people that don't know how to give back. Yes, they could volunteer one-off for this event or that event, but they're looking for something maybe a little bit more consistent, in a consistent manner to give back. Mm-hmm. So my involvement with Rotary started back in 2011. A current Rotarian of the Laguna Beach Club, Jeff Redeker, invited me to volunteer for a Grapes for Grad event that they host every April.
Did you say grapes?
Grapes for Grad. It was a wine tasting event.
Oh, I like that.
And so, you know, again, it was as simple as putting up tents and placing trash can bins and glasses on trash can bins in the area of where the wine tasting would take place, and setting glasses on table and putting ice in ice buckets. And I did that for 2 years, and I thought, wow, this is really neat. As I was doing that, I was asking, well, so where do the funds go? Who are the funds directed? Where, you know, where does this fundraising, where are the money, the revenue from the fundraising? Well, who is it geared to? And they told me it was geared to local charities and individuals. So much like any Rotary Club, they may assemble food baskets for Thanksgiving, distribute supplies to school children, much like the Irvine Rotary does in, today. And they provide scholarships to students and so forth. So I attended one of their meetings about 2 to 3 years later and decided to become a Rotarian. And that's where my Rotarian journey began, was with the Laguna Beach Rotary Club. Then I work took me to Irvine, even though that's not such a great distance. But anyone who's familiar with Laguna Beach in Southern California knows that Laguna Beach really becomes popular during the summer months. And so in order to attend meetings, I would have to carve out approximately 3 hours of my day for travel, attending the meeting, and so forth.
Oh, my.
During the weekday. So I joined the Irvine Rotary because their meetings were in the morning. They meet every Wednesday morning at 7:30 a.m. And they offered just the same number, actually more types of community projects than Laguna Beach Club offered. Irvine's significantly a larger city than Laguna Beach. So the number of projects that Irvine Rotary offers its members to participate in, volunteer, to become a part of, was significantly greater than Laguna Beach, again, just based on city size. And so I joined Irvine Rotary and found it as equally rewarding as being in the Laguna Beach Club. Members were friendly, much like they were at the chamber, welcoming, engaging. It's really been a nice venue to give back to the community.
Now, I do understand that you have a significant role inside of the Irvine Rotary.
Yes, my role is publicity chair, which is attempting to manage all of their social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Meetup, LinkedIn, and so forth. It's a pretty social media can be a little overwhelming once one dives into social media for an organization and takes on that role and responsibility.
Wow. Well, let me recap. Okay, so you have your cybersecurity business. You are a member of the chamber and help them with training inside of the leads group and networking, and you're an ambassador. And you also are the publicity chair for the Irvine Rotary, not to mention you're also a significant member as well. So what do you do for fun?
For fun. A few things. One, I'm an ice hockey referee. So I've just been certified this last September. And I've been reffing ice hockey games. I'm also a play on an ice hockey team called the Bombers. We play here at the Great Park in Irvine, the newly open, just open. Actually, they're coming up on their year anniversary, I believe, in January. So perhaps that explains my like for cold weather. Enjoy being out on the ice, both as a player and as a ref. And also, I play softball. So I used to play on two softball teams. I only play on one now. It's been a great learning experience to play on a team with both. I went out there and, you know, I hadn't played softball since I was a kid and was finally able to catch the ball and hit the ball, and the end result was three league titles. The same with ice hockey. I remember my first time out on the ice, I was really unable to skate, and five league titles later, you know, I'm a member of the Bombers, and it's really been the only team that I've ever played on. So it's a good time, good exercise.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Because I realized when we met today that you are wearing the Irvine Softball Champions.
Yes. For each one, when you win your division in these recreational sports, instead of a trophy, you get a shirt of some sort and a picture with a for example, at the Great Parks on ice hockey, a replica of the Stanley Cup. I think when it comes to sports, the reason that I enjoy both softball and ice hockey, as well as reffing. One, it really underscores the importance of working together with a team, much like Rotary underscores that as well. Many people from different walks of life coming together to be one to accomplish an objective.
Well, thank you. It's really, I have to admire you for all the things that you do And it's good to hear that you do things for fun, because it sounds like you have a full life.
Thank you.
And speaking of life, do you have any siblings?
Yes, I do. I have three older sisters and a little brother, and we're still very close to this day. We all live in the general area within about 50 miles of each other. That includes siblings and, you know, nieces, nephews, pretty large extended family. Unfortunately, our parents are no longer with us, but their legacy lives on and that we're still very close.
Well, I think that having you as a brother would be pretty cool.
Thank you. They may not say that, but especially at family events when we're all joking around with each other. But it's a great great group of three sisters and my little brother, even though he's not so little these days. yeah, it's great hanging out with them.
So in closing, I'm going to ask you a very pointed question. What world events have had the most impact in your lifetime?
I'd say two. One was a world event. One was just a major event. We'll go with three and I'll bundle two. The world event.
No, we'll talk about all three because you've had quite the life.
the world event that impacted my life, I think more so than any other, were the 9/11, the attack on 9/11.
Okay.
I think every generation has an event that stops them right in their tracks, and they will never forget what they really did that each and every second that that event was unfolding.
Yes.
And on 9/11, Pacific time zone was 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And so I was awakened by a phone call, you know, to turn on the TV. And I did, and immediately thought this is an attack of some kind. Mm-hmm. Even with the planes flying into the World Trade Center towers. The first one, at least, and simply because it was a sunny day out. So I knew just instantly that planes just don't fly into buildings out of the blue. So mm-hmm. That was one. The second event that probably had an impact was the passing of my parents. Mm-hmm. That was significant because while they left our family at different times, they had certain wishes that they wanted us to carry on. And so both were actually a little traumatic, as most passings are, mm-hmm. but it really brought us together as a family.
Oh, good.
As a whole, the siblings and mm-hmm. and our parents and so forth. So that was the second impact. And then to bring a little levity as to what also impacted my life was when the LA Kings, the Los Angeles Kings, won the Stanley Cup in 2012. I had been a season ticket holder for 28 years.
Uh-huh.
And they had gone to the Stanley Cup to play for the Stanley Cup in 1993. And, you know, it was in 2012 when they finally won the cup that it was a unique experience. I don't know how it impacted my life, but just to bring a little levity to the conversation, I remember where I was during that Stanley Cup run. And I think the most important part, even though me and my little brother are close, and we have always been close, we've always rooted for somewhat different teams.
Uh-huh.
The Kings are one team that we really get behind emotionally and financially and root for together.
Oh, that is great. Well, Joe, it has been wonderful getting to know a little bit more about you. And, you know, I'm always amazed whenever we sit down and talk that, you know, there's so much to you. And having the opportunity to do this on StoryCorp was even better.
Well, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to come in and tell my story, so to speak, and to sit down with you and have this conversation.
Well, this is Dr. Janet Woods and Joe Alvarez signing off at StoryCorp in Irvine, California.